Brought to you by North Memorial Health, where customers are treated like family. That means a big smile when you walk in the door and making sure your visit is as pleasant as possible. It's just like your family treats you. Find your healthy family at northmemorial.com/family.
Welcome to another episode of the Access Vikings podcast. My name is Andrew Kramer, joined via teleconference by Ben Gessling and Michael Rand of the Star Tribune. Hello to you both.
Hey, Andrew, how you doing?
Doing pretty well. Ben, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. You should know that I waved at you like I always do. People don't see that. You see it every week, but even though you can't see me, you should know that I waved at you like I do every week.
I appreciate that. Thank you for keeping up the tradition. We got to keep up some sense of normalcy around here.
I was waiting for Ben to say something, but I should have known that he was just waving.
All right, we are going to discuss everything that's happened since the last podcast that we recorded right around the Stephon Diggs trade. The Vikings have made some more moves on defense. The overhaul continues. We'll give you some numbers to kind of put that into context and in the kind of challenge that Mike Zimmer and Rick Spielman are facing entering the seventh season together. Specifically, we'll get into the situations with Everson Griffin, Anthony Harris, and some of the other guys that have gone out the door, but mainly with those two, because those two are going to be the biggest ones. So Ben, I want to start off with you. And then of course, I guess I should also mention later, we'll take your Twitter questions as we always do. But Ben, I want to start off.
There are a lot of them.
There are. Really came out. I think people are just thirsty for it. I think it's just about time to focus on something else. All right, Ben, I want to start off with you though, with Everson Griffin. He comes out last week and before he signs somewhere else, he just says, I'm not coming back to Minnesota. His agent put out a statement saying that they're breaking off talks, that the Vikings have to spend their money elsewhere. What do you know as far as how this divorce really after 10 years came about?
Yeah. I mean, I think that a lot of what he put out there publicly matched what had been happening privately. I mean, the Vikings, and I think we've talked about it a little bit, a lot of their approach with him has been, hey, you've been here 10 years, you've been through a lot here on and off the field, and we want you to continue here. Their approach had been more along, I guess, playing on the relationship, playing on the years he had been here, more so than it had been, hey, you had a good year and we want to pay you a market rate deal. Part of that is they have other pieces at that position, obviously Danielle Hunter being the predominant one, and then some of the younger guys like Ifeadi Odenigbo that they like as well. So I don't think the big offer was ever going to come from here, but I think they thought or probably hoped in a lot of ways that being able to get Everson Griffin to come back for less than his market would bear would be an option. I don't think they ever had any great intention of paying him the $8 to $10 million a year that I think he is hoping he'll get. And a lot of this is still going to be dictated by the way the rest of this market falls at that position. But I don't think they ever had a view that they could pay him a lot of money at that position. And they were hoping that he would say, yeah, you know what, I like it here, I'm going to stick with it and come back for another year. But from what I've heard, in some ways it had the opposite effect. I think he saw some of that stuff and said, you know what, I had a good year and I know kind of what the approach is here and I understand it, but if you want me, then in the words of Rod Tidwell from a movie that went in our sports draft the other night, late in our sports movie draft the other night at the Star Tribune, show me the money. And they have not, to this point, done that, and they don't really have enough of it to show him anyway. So he continues to look. I know Seattle has had interest. I don't think he's at the top of their list, but if Jadeveon Clowney doesn't come back there, I think there's certainly a scenario in which he winds up there in the end.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. The way the whole off season has played out. He's a pretty kind of a microcosm of it. Just because, you know, obviously, like you guys have been talking about on, you know, the last podcast, you know, when some of the other moves had been made already, not just the Diggs trade, but I think by then both Trey Waynes and Mackenzie Alexander at that point probably had already signed with the Bengals. Now you got Xavier Rhodes. We'll get to some of that in a little bit. Just what surprised me in all of this was you kind of looked going in at this off season and you said, okay, they can probably keep player X, but not player Y. And instead, it's kind of turning into, no, I guess they can't keep either one. They can't keep either Waynes or Alexander. They can't keep Linval Joseph or Everson Griffin. And it, you know, some of it is just players who have options and can do other things, because that's what free agency is. And part of it is kind of really understanding just how strapped they are. And like Ben said, like, even if they wanted to pay Everson Griffin, they just don't have a lot of, you know, they have to really, they're backed in enough that they had to really prioritize in one way or the other, even if they're saving some cap space by, you know, even with, you know, the Diggs trade, even though there's some dead cap there, you know, the Stephon Diggs trade, the, you know, the Josh Klein move, you know, the more obvious ones with Rhodes, you know, who's now going to the Colts. But it's kind of been an eye opener in, you know, whether this was a conscious philosophical shift that they need to get younger, or if it was just, man, we got to get younger because we can't pay any of these guys. This offseason has been an eye opener, and Everson Griffin was kind of the real, you know, illustration of that to me.
Yeah, and some of it too is not always going according to the Vikings' plan. I wanted to re-sign Linval Joseph, didn't work out. He ended up getting more money elsewhere. I knew they made an offer to Mackenzie Alexander to keep him, but everything we knew about Mackenzie's feelings about the coaching staff in Minnesota after his tumultuous up and down tenure, a reunion was pretty far-fetched. It was the same thing with his former Clemson teammate in J'Ron Kearse. So some of these guys, they could have wanted to have kept and re-signed. In fact, we know they wanted to keep Linval. We know they wanted to keep Everson if the money worked. It's just finally, I think these things are coming to a head and the bills are due and the money's not working with a lot of these guys. And their luck is kind of, I don't want to say running out, but it's not as high as it once was when Harrison Smith, when you got a guy like Harrison Smith, who's really okay with playing below market value, and Danielle Hunter doing the same thing. You don't get many of those guys doing that. Now we're seeing that with some of these guys leaving and saying, either I'm going to chase the money, or with Rhodes and Alexander, I'm going to go chase an opportunity to re-up for 1 year and then cash in next year, where the Vikings just don't give one-year contracts. And so, Ben, from what you know about with Everson, clearly they wanted to give him a multi-year extension and kind of keep him the rest of his career. But even then, it seems like they couldn't work the money out to spread it across multiple years and keep him happy.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of how long they would keep him, I think I'm not entirely sure there. And I think some of that's a moot point, because they would have structured it in a way that they could have moved on from him probably after a year or so anyway. I think the thing to remember with Rhodes and Joseph and Griffin is all three of those guys have done at least two contracts with the Vikings. So you're talking about players who have probably already had their big bite at the apple, to use the tired cliche, and are trying to maximize their earnings in the later portions of their careers. And I think in some ways, if they're sitting there saying, you know what, I want to see if I can get a little bit more elsewhere, or I want to go out and try something different, it may be different for a player earlier in his career, but this is kind of where they're at too, in the sense that you have a lot of guys who are 30, 31, 32 years old and that are trying to make these decisions. This is not a roster. They're still fairly young overall, but it's a roster of guys that are in their 30s or approaching 30, are in their second, third contracts, or it's guys who are very young. We've talked about it, and it's worth repeating that there's not much of a middle class on this roster. And you have, when that happens, you have guys like the ones we just mentioned that are maybe at a different point of their careers where the decision process changes a little bit. And I think some of that is probably what led some of these guys to say, I don't need to come back for less money when I've been here this long.
Well, Mike, doesn't this seem a little bit, and Ben, to this question, I guess, to you too, it seems a little bit like a mini rebuild, almost because of the financial ramp, but not only because these guys are hitting 30, because you got some of these guys who are reaching that age, but also because of the financial stuff. For so many years, it seemed like magic, and now it's like, no, these numbers still have to make it work, and they just can't with everybody.
Yeah, I would say this is definitely a defensive rebuild. I mean, it's you're talking about half the starters, depending on how you parse it out, and whatever happens with with Anthony Harris, who's here for now, and we'll talk about him in a little bit. But you know, whether that's something, whether he's going to be here or whether he's still, you know, fodder for a trade after they put the tag on him. But yeah, I mean, I don't know if we'll ever know for sure how much of this was done out of necessity, how much of it was done out of a bona fide real desire to get younger and to understand the, you know, the whole young man's game thing. But yeah, this is absolutely a defensive rebuild, and it's, you know, I would say it's more by necessity than choice, because even though there were cracks in the defense last year, you know, by all advanced metrics, this was still a top seven, top eight, maybe even top five defense in a lot of ways. They weren't as good on third down. They weren't as good in some areas, but you know, they this is definitely in the secondary and on the line. This is a big remake.
Yeah, and Ben, you pointed out in the story you wrote for Sunday after free agency opened, this is a Vikings team that got ran over in the playoffs. Mike Zimmer says it right after the game. This is a young man's game. So maybe they were seeing this kind of stuff coming better than we were in terms of just totally redoing the roster on defense.
And I had that conversation with a couple people in the building. I had tweeted something about that and got a couple texts pretty quickly after that. And it was like, yeah, it's not, I mean, everybody on the outside is these moves all hit at once and the names are significant. It's names that have been here a long time. It sort of has that reaction of, oh my gosh, what's going on? Do these people want to be here? It's like the piece of this that we probably don't talk about enough is when they get back together after their break that Mike Zimmer gave them after the playoff game, they sit down and go through the entire roster and make decisions at that point about, do we think this guy can still play? If he's a free agent, how much do we think he's worth? How do we like him compared to the rest of the free agents? What do we think of the draft class? All of these conversations that happen behind closed doors are going on throughout the offseason, and in many cases have happened before they get to the combine. So they, quite a few weeks ago now, have made decisions about what they think of these guys, how they fit in the plan, do we want them back, how hard are we going to push, how much are we going to offer. This is not like it's all just happening at once and they're operating without any kind of a flight manual, so to speak. There are certain things that they can't control into the ways the market works out and everything like that. But when Mike Zimmer said it on January 13th, I think that was about as clear of a hint as he was going to give that this is going to look a lot different. And even at the combine, he talked about, we may have to do some things differently with the way we play schemes, the way we pressure packages, coverage packages, because we're going to look so much different. I don't think he has run away at all from the idea that this is going to be one of those years where we have to refresh it a little bit.
I think you're going to have a hard time convincing me, though, that this has gone exactly to plan. They surprisingly franchise tag him, as we discussed before, but what they haven't been able to do is, Ben, what you were reporting and saying earlier to me off the podcast is that apparently they wanted to trade him right away, and they have not been able to do so. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, the initial reaction when they did that, when they tagged him, from what I've heard, was, yeah, let's go ahead and trade him. And part of the logic there, I think, is if you look at the number of free agents they're losing, and now they have gotten more into this life cycle where they get compensatory picks. They have three this year. They have gotten more of those in recent years than they have in the past, and they like getting those. It is a benefit of the system to get rid of free agents and reap those picks, like the Patriots have done masterfully through the years. The Packers have had quite a few of these picks as well. They, I think, felt like with how many free agents we're going to lose, we may be maxed out on comp picks we can get next year anyway. You can't get more than four of them. So I think some of the calculation may have been with Anthony Harris. Okay, if we lose him, we are – maybe not going to get another comp pick anyway, given how many other guys we're going to lose. And if we're capped out, let's try to tag him, trade him, get another pick or two this year. I think initially that was a lot of the thinking, but from what I've heard as they've sat there and gone over it more, they have maybe peeled away from that a little bit, or whether that's because they like him more or whether it's because the offers didn't come through. we'll have to see. I think that the Browns certainly had interest, and the Browns have kind of moved on now to get an offer or to get Andrew Sadejo in there, and we'll see if they have more interest in going somewhere else. But I think the immediate reaction of we have to trade Anthony Harris, from what I understand, they've cooled on that to some degree, and maybe they'll try to extend him, maybe they'll try to trade him later, but I don't think it's a trade is quite as imminent as it sounded like it was right when they tagged him.
Well, Mike, do you think it's such a worst-case scenario that they end up being stuck with Anthony Harris at $11 million? It's for a top-end safety the way he developed, that's actually not a bad price tag for 1 year.
Yeah, I think it's fine. If they didn't have cap problems, it would seem even more strange that they were so willing to get rid of him. It is a testament to, I guess, you know, like we've talked about, Mike Zimmer has never really valued that second safety all that much. It feels like he thinks you can fill that role easily is the wrong word, but that Harrison Smith is so good that, you know, you just need someone functional over there. And instead of just functional, they wound up with a guy who's awfully good. And maybe they don't need that per se, but yeah, I think they would, you know, there's a little bit of hubris involved here, I think, in terms of their own belief and Zimmer's own belief in coaching defensive backs in particular, that I think they would probably find out more than they wanted to, how good Harris is when he was gone as opposed to just when he was here. So if he does end up staying, it's a boon to the defense. He's one of their best players right now. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, and if this was their plan, it makes a whole lot of sense. If their plan, as Ben was describing, of, hey, let's grab an extra, you know, essentially a fifth compensatory draft pick that you're not allowed to have because it's maxed out at four, let's get that through a tag and trade. And maybe it's a third round pick from a team like Cleveland and Kevin Stefanski, who would know Anthony so well and would maybe talk that front office into spending that kind of a pick for him. The reports out of the Cleveland Plain Dealer and Browns media are that was just too rich for what Cleveland wanted. Cleveland said, look, we already know we have to pay this guy maybe $14 million a year. They want a third round pick. We're not going to do that. And so I wonder if that end kind of fell apart on the Vikings. The Browns go out there, they sign Carl Joseph, they sign Andrew Sandejo away from the Vikings. So yeah, it seems like the plan kind of just shifted on them a little bit, as Ben said initially. He's reporting they want to move him, and I think they kind of screwed up and weren't able to get what they wanted initially. Now, it's certainly possible they find a way to move him before the draft, during the draft, and maybe the right suitor comes along. Maybe they free up that $11 million somehow and get something for him. If it's not a third rounder, maybe a fourth rounder or something that would be equivalent to at least some kind of level of compensatory pick. Ben, let's shift and talk about Michael Pierce right now, because that signing happened after our last podcast.
Yes, it did.
Mike, we have not talked about that either. So
no.
With Michael Pierce coming on, he's the new Linval Joseph. On his conference call with Twin Cities media, he had said that Andre Patterson, the co-defensive coordinator and defensive line coach, told him that he envisions Michael Pierce being in a similar spot in his development as kind of where Linval Joseph was when Linval signed with the Vikings 6-7 years ago. Ben, is this the kind of signing that it's not one that's going to make a big splash, but perhaps it's one that in 2 or 3 years you look back on and go, yeah, that was a pretty good one for them, because this kid played pretty well in Baltimore, did the kind of stuff Linval did in New York, can stop the run. And we know obviously how important that Linval was here for Minnesota and everything he did.
Yeah, I think this, I mean, the nose tackle position obviously was the first thing they did in free agency when Mike Zimmer became the head coach, and certainly Andre Patterson as the defensive line coach at that point. That was the first move they made in free agency. I think it's an important one for them. I think they know it's something they need, and I don't think it's an accident that they went out and did that first this time. I think they knew they needed to kind of refresh that position. And yeah, the hope here, I think, is that Michael Pierce turns into Linval Joseph 2.0. And he has been very good at times when he has been in Baltimore, and he's had issues keeping his weight down. I mean, he's been very open about that, and was open with us about it last week on his conference call as well. And, you know, to the point where I think John Harbaugh had sat him out of some of their off-season workout program, because he's like, I don't want you to hurt yourself here. And he went and lost quite a bit of weight in that break between mini camp and training camp. So that is part of the history with him. But I think their hope is, I mean, he talked about his powerlifting background. I mean, Limbaugh, as I think, Andrew, you've written about quite a bit, and we've talked about, his strength was off the charts. And I think they probably see a similar template here in a guy that's very hard to move, a guy that is able to swallow up a lot of blockers and just be able to get a lot of push in the middle of that defensive line. And then you kind of go from there.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what he brings. He could bring the same things that Linval did. And I think Linval was, you know, getting to be a little, you know, a little bit on, we euphemistically call it the wrong side of 30. Not being able to do all of the things he used to do. And you saw, you know, you saw the run defense really suffered last year. I don't know how much of that you can pin on just, you know, just on Linval. Certainly wasn't all him, but, you know, when you don't have a nose tackle that you think can really do those things in the run stopping game, especially, you know, you look at a lot of the playoff loss, they just got blown off the ball, and that's more of a team thing. But yeah, I mean, if you're talking about the ability to stop the run, which is what he made his living on, a refresh at that position didn't surprise me, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and even if they were managed to re-sign Linval, I would have been surprised had he returned to the same role. If he had still kind of jumped in and been that 60-70% nose tackle, I just don't know if that would have been the case, because as you had mentioned, he had gotten to that point where he's going to be 32 next season. He's been through three surgeries in the past 2 years. Just wasn't the same player because of the way that the game just wears on you when you're that size. And so I think when Mike Zimmer talks about the game, you know, being a young man's game right after the Niners put up 200 rushing yards, a big part of that's going to be refueling the trenches. And Mike, what are you doing over there? Are you making like a smoothie?
You're like, sorry, I think I hear that? Sound like he's like duct taping something.
Yeah.
We're in the middle of not a family crisis, but a family emergency.
No,
we're fine. I'm just preparing something for the second of three kids. They're all upstairs right now, but I needed to procure something for one of them. And now we're back in business. The joys of working from home are actual and real. And then sometimes they are just challenges that we encounter on a daily basis now that I have four coworkers and three of them are under the age of five.
that's not too different working around sports sometimes, so it's all right.
That's true. The maturity level actually has gone up, which is nice. I had to take care of that. But yeah, the point stands about, you know, just they got blown over in the running game. And it wasn't just that game either. It was other points last year where it just didn't feel like the run stopping was where they wanted it to be. And, you know, obviously the nose tackle in their system, you know, isn't always the one that makes the plays. He's the one that occupies blockers, occupies two guys, you know, takes up space, lets the linebackers make the plays. But if they were worried that it was going to go from, you know, still okay to even worse, it was time to change.
Say the injury history with Linval was starting to mount as well. I mean, he had a couple of surgeries before last season and then had the knee issue that he played with for a lot of the year. I mean, they spent a lot of the season managing that. I think he had fluid drained out of that meniscus a couple of times from what I understand, and then had the operation right before that Dallas game in November that they finally said, okay, we got to shut this down for a couple of weeks and try to get it better. But when you have those types of things, I mean, that is a very demanding position. It's a lot of, I mean, knee and shoulder injuries are things that are going to add up when you're playing in that spot. And it's as physical of a job as it was and will continue to be. So that stuff is not unique. And I think they probably felt like, all right, you've been doing this an awfully long time. You're going to be 32 years old. There's no reason that we would have to say that this is going to happen less. I mean, it is a function of aging at a very demanding position that's probably going to happen more. And I think that probably factored into their thinking there as well.
Yeah, and it wasn't just Linval's age. The Vikings tried to plug a lot of resources at defensive tackle, whether it's a few years ago signing Dayton Jones or and moving him to that spot, or Jahleel Johnson, fourth round, Jalen Holmes, fourth round, Armin Watts this year, who they really liked and who could be a player in the future. But the other pieces previously just didn't really come up behind Linval, and maybe that led to him playing a bit too much over the past couple years, because we've come to season's end. And I think this has actually happened the past couple of years, where Mike Zimmer has made some kind of comment about maybe Linval needs to play less.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's a really good point, in the sense that they have had more luck doing that. I mean, he's talked about this idea of this rotation for years, and then
right.
I think the times we've seen it, I mean, there was the one time I think Andre Patterson tried a complete substitute, put in the second team defensive line.
Hockey line that, change.
Yeah, basically, it's what it amounted to. And it's like, no, we don't want to do that. So whether it's been you have to lean on your guys to win games when it's close, or whether it's been guys behind the starters haven't materialized to the way that they wanted, it has been a lot of years where it's 800 snaps, 900 snaps, you know, maybe more than that in some cases for the defensive ends. But certainly for Linval, it's been a lot of those years. And again, those snaps are not low stress, low contact snaps where he's on the backside of a play and maybe shoves somebody and that's all the contact you get. At pretty much every play with him, it's banging into somebody, and that toll just adds up over time.
In the way he played the game too, I remember Harrison Smith telling me once that it'd be in practice where the most dangerous play that he would encounter in practice is when a running back was running at him about 15 yards downfield. And I said, why don't they blow the play dead? And he said, no, because Linval's usually trailing him like a rock slide. And I'm like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. So I think Linval just over the years made is so accustomed just completely selling out, and never was a guy that was going to get charged with being lazy. He was always chasing after people and causing collisions and maybe injuries to teammates. People who don't know Michael Pierce, just a quick rundown. He was undrafted out of Samford, came on pretty quick for the Ravens, was a four-year contributor, was actually one of two nose tackles that played for them. He said that he got kind of squeezed out there because Brandon Williams, who's a long term guy for them, has a big contract. He's going to be their true nose tackle moving forward as they kind of reshift the line, bringing in Calais Campbell and some other pieces there too. So the Vikings end up getting a guy who they intend on giving a bigger role to, and who played more of a part role at his former team. Michael Pierce has not played more than 55 snaps in any season. I expect that's going to go up quite a bit with the Vikings. Guys, let's talk about some of the other moves they made before we get to Twitter questions. How are they going to replace Stephon Diggs? I thought it was funny that when the news came out that they signed Tajae Sharpe, I think it was somehow painted in that he's going to replace Stephon Diggs. And Ben, I can't imagine that's the case. He's just a nice veteran depth addition. Is that correct?
Yeah, he is. I mean, he's going to be a guy that's in the mix, and they only had one other receiver on the roster that had played more than 1 year in the league at that before they made that move, and that, of course, is Adam Thielen. So you need somebody at that position that has been around and is a little bit more of a proven commodity than what they have. But this is a deep receiver draft, and I would be very surprised if they don't make some kind of an addition there. I think B.C. Johnson is a guy they like. I think he's a guy that they expect can make a jump in year two. But you still need probably somebody who's a little more dynamic. I mean, Adam Thielen is your most established guy, and when he's healthy, he's one of the best in the league. But he turns 30 in June, and I wouldn't say B.C. Johnson or Tajae Sharpe is a guy that is going to be your deep threat replacement for Stephon Diggs, at least what Stephon Diggs became last year. Now, Adam Thielen has been a very good deep threat over the years, and I think can still be that guy, but you probably want to develop some other options there, especially in view of how much attention Adam Thielen is probably going to get from opposing defenses this year. So, yeah, I think it's the start, but I don't think they're done at that position by any means.
It's been a while, though, since they've, you know, had to live a life where they didn't really have a number one receiver. And what this kind of does is it really reduces their margin for error, right? The Diggs trade. I mean, if say the same thing that happened last year, you know, nobody wants this to happen, but you know, a hamstring happens. Like if Adam Thielen goes down for what was basically half the year again, their margin for error right now is, you know, you're kind of talking about going back to the days where, you know, it was, we didn't know who their, you know, there was a number one receiver by default. And I think we're kind of dealing with that as a number two receiver by default right now, but it's going to be interesting. It's going to, all of their moves this offseason are really going to stress their depth and stress their systems. Like can Gary Kubiak, you know, is the way they want to play really feasible with the guys they have? Can Mike Zimmer continue to, you know, coach these guys up and make a remade defensive backfield work when, you know, you've gotten rid of so many guys that at least, even if you didn't love what they were doing, especially in 2019, you knew what they could do. You don't know a lot about what these other guys are going to do, and that's a real risk for 2020.
Yeah, what the Vikings lose in shipping out Stephon Diggs is a whole lot of speed. And watching Tajay Sharpe, just going back and looking at some of the Titans film and what he was able to do last year, he was drafted in the fifth round. He's a really good route runner, really precise, but he's not the athlete that Stephon was. And Stephon was a fifth-round pick only because of more of inconsistent college production and off-the-field stuff. It had nothing to do with him being kind of a five-star athlete. Tajay Sharpe is not that. He's more of a guy that they're going to put on the outside. He's not even a slot guy. Tennessee had him as their main slot in 2018. They didn't like it so much that they went out and gave Adam Humphries a ton of money. And then they moved Tajay to this like 30% role, just playing on the outside a little bit. Thing is, he can make plays. He's got great hands and can run some sharp routes. And so I think he's going to have more of a dynamic role if he makes the team than, let's say, Aldrick Robinson, who just ran the occasional go route. Because Aldrick was just a fast guy. He had one speed, just go down the field. I think they'll use Tajay differently. The thing, though, that they don't have right now is that speed. They're really lacking that go route. So I'm wondering, like Ben said, the draft. Maybe they just got to turn to the draft and take a couple swings there and try to find that kind of home run hitter, because Tajay Sharpe's not going to be it.
Real quick, I think as you look at the 2019 draft class, I think, and they invested a lot in offense there, I think a lot of this season could hinge on what they get out of those guys in year two, because you lose Stephon Diggs, so you're counting on more from Adam Thielen, who, like I said, is going to be 30 years old, has typically been extremely durable, but had a hamstring injury last year that was kind of a pesky problem, and I don't think anybody was terribly happy with it. It took as long as it did. I think some of the ways that was treated, I mean, that's been a problem for them, is getting guys back from hamstring injuries, and from what I understand, that was a source of frustration again, and Thielen talked about it a little bit, but when you have a guy at that point and you have a guy like Dalvin Cook who has had trouble staying on the field, either through fluky things or just the toll of playing that position, you have to have guys behind them that step up. And that's Alexander Mattison maybe playing a bigger role this year. Maybe it's Irv Smith becoming a bigger part of the offense. It's BC Johnson probably doing more, but they are, and frankly, it's Garrett Bradbury being a lot better in year two in the middle of that offensive line than he was in year one. I think the offense is going to hinge a lot on what that 2019 draft class gives you in year two.
It is not at all going to hinge on what the 2016 draft class gives you, as you tweeted earlier.
It can't,
because there are zero left from that.
Yeah, CJ Ham, undrafted free agent, is the remaining member of it, as a few people pointed out to me about the draft. Like, yeah, he's here, but your first and second round picks are gone, and you cut your fourth round pick in camp that year. That was not a great draft, and the Rick Spielman people, you know, like to point out, it was just one. The 2015 draft was a outstanding year. 2016, the reason it comes up is because those guys are now moving into free agency. The free agents this year are primarily 2016 draft picks getting done with their first contracts. So that's why it's a bigger question. And they've had a few of these drafts. I mean, 2017 gave you Dalvin Cook. Pat Elflein has been useful, I think. And there's one other guy in that draft class that's produced as well. My name is escaping me at the moment, but they need some of these classes here to hit in a big way like that 15 class did, or it's going to get a little tough, especially when you're picking late. You need some of those guys to hit, and you need to be right on some of those guys pretty quickly.
Ben, let's take and Mike, not you. You know, I'm going to include you too, Mike. Let's take thanks, some let's thanks, take some Andrew. Twitter questions. We got
Bobby Odenovo was the other 2017 yes. pick that and Ben Gedion to some degree, but Odenovo probably is the one that has splashed the most.
For sure. All right, let's take some Twitter questions. We got a lot of them. Thanks to you guys for coming strong once again. Let's start with this one. Mike Ellis asks, and then I suppose we can just kind of go around. Ben, you guys, do you guys have the questions in front of you? We're doing a nice pre-show meeting on air.
Yep, I can grab. Yep.
All right, so after this, Ben, you just grab the next one. Mike, you grab the next one and so forth. All right, sure. Mike Ellis asks, if everybody is locked in quarantine, just how far out of shape will the players be when they finally report to training camp? Because I'm going to go through chips and ice cream like nobody's business. Ben, how far out of shape is everybody going to be, including the reporters?
I mean, you guys got to speak for yourself. I ran 5 miles yesterday. The last mile was 6:30. I'm going to probably go for a 9 mile run when we're done with this podcast. And so, you know,
you're lucky. I mean,
you got to speak for yourself a little bit.
They're going to start arresting you for doing that.
No running is allowed. Tim Wall said I can still go run. The news media is an essential service, and me running is an essential activity. Take it up with your governor. tim.walls@state.mn.us or something. I don't know what it is.
We've seen videos of Adam Thielen working out in his home gym, but I think there are a lot of players who are not so fortunate, or at least at the point of the career where they've got the millions to have a home gym. So, Ben, what have we heard from Michael Pierce, Tajae Sharpe, some of the free agents they've brought in about how they're operating this quarantine?
Yeah, it's been interesting. Pierce talked about it last week that he said his gym has closed, and so he's still trying to find some things he can do. He's got a meal planner that he's working with. But I'm going to be interested to see this, how this goes, because I think a lot of guys are used to just being able to go to the gym and work out and spend a lot of the offseason throwing weights around and trying to get big. And it requires a little bit of a different approach. It requires a little bit more creativity. Probably simply because you don't have access to those same kinds of things when everything is closed. And I'm planning to dig into that a little bit here later in the month. Just curious to hear what more guys are doing, trying to find ways around it. Because, yeah, as Michael Pierce talked about and Tajae Sharpe got into a little bit as well, you have to do some different things. I think he talked about, you know, having a treadmill in his house. And it's interesting that, too, because – the Vikings don't necessarily want guys just going out and running. The approach that I take in my own workouts as a track and cross country guy is not one that they want their players taking. Mike Zimmer has talked about, I don't necessarily want big aerobic conditioning type things, because while it gets your endurance in better shape, it does take away from your fast twitch muscle fibers. And certainly in football, you don't want to lose those things. So when you're limited in what you can do at home, it is going to be very interesting to watch. I think that's going to be one of the more fascinating subplots of the offseason, is how guys keep themselves in shape and what effect that has when everybody can come back whenever that is.
Yeah, Will. All right. Ben, why don't you go ahead and grab a question here?
Yeah, I will. I'll offer up the one from my buddy Joel, who is a better X's and O's mind than I am. He worked in North Dakota State's football department a few years ago, so has a better command of film study than a lot of us do. He asks, do you think the Vikings will make a move for Trent Williams? This was a very popular question. If so, does Riley Reiff move to guard, and what do you think we'd be willing to give up to make it happen? Do we even have the cap space to sign him to the big deal he apparently wants? That's like three questions, but
I like it. Good ones.
They're all kind of connected. So the Trent Williams topic, we got a lot of it. What do you guys think?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's interesting. Mike. I mean, how do you pay him, I guess, is, that's the you know, question. And that kind of gets to, you know, some other people are wondering, like, you know, someone else said, you know, Rick Spielman's never usually this quiet in free agency. Do you think he's got something up his sleeve? And it's like, I think he'd like to. How do you do it, though? They've it feels like they've kind of, you know, cut almost to the bone just to keep some of the guys they want and to do the Pierce deal. And I just don't know if they have the wherewithal, unless they can make some magic happen, unless they're, you know, maybe the Anthony Harris trade does do something for that, maybe if it happens. But it's just hard to imagine how they make it happen financially. I'm sure they'd love to do it from a football standpoint because he's a great player.
I got a small bone to pick with that guy because he must have showed up right after the 2017 NFC Championship game because the Vikings are always quiet in free agency. I think it's just that one that one year they signed Kirk Cousins and Sheldon Richardson and made a big splash, and now everybody expects big things.
Right.
Trent Williams is going to be, how do you pay him? Because it's reported $15, $16 million a year that he would accept. And then the suitors for Washington, reading ESPN's reporting with John Keim, who covers the Washington team out there, he's saying that the Vikings are a team that would make sense, the Browns, obviously, Tampa Bay, but there's not a whole lot of them. There's not a whole lot of teams that have a glaring hole at left tackle, a window to kind of want to win now, and then an ability to just hand off the draft capital that Washington wants. Ben, what do you think the chances are that the Vikings wouldn't just wait this out and say, all right, we'll wait until after the draft and maybe we come away with a left tackle ourselves?
Well, and that's the thing is they have the capital to make it work now with the two first round picks, and you could trade a second and say, okay, we've got two firsts, so we're not really out anything that way. But yeah, I think, when it's as good of a tackle draft as they have said it is, and they have signaled that, and generally when they talk about a position like that, they have their history is that that's consistent. I mean, they talked up the interior line class last year before taking Garrett Bradbury. You know, we've heard them do that at times, and I think tackle is very much going to be in the mix. I don't know why you wouldn't at this point. Unless you think there's going to be so much competition for Trent Williams that you're not going to have a shot at him later, or that you're not really that high on the draft class, I don't know why you wouldn't at least try to play that out and say, can we go in the first round and get a guy that we like? And if not, then maybe we make the trade before day two. We trade for Trent Williams. I could see that. Because the thing with him, too, is he's had injuries. He's in his early 30s. I mean, he's been very, very good. And he knows Kirk Cousins. He's played with Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins, I certainly think it's safe to wonder if he has been in their ear saying, hey, I would love to see this happen. But when you're in your early 30s and you've had some injuries and all of that stuff is in the file already, so to speak, if there's a 21, 22-year-old you like, I don't know why you wouldn't just take a look at that, especially when you can do it for a lot less money. Now, if they did it, there are financially, I see two levers they could pull here. You could do something with Anthony Harris, whether that's trade him or do a deal that reduces his cap hit this year in exchange for money down the road, or you cut Riley Reiff. They have not done anything with that. You'd take on more dead money, but you'd save like $8.8 million if you did it. And if you knew you had a left tackle coming in, maybe you do that instead of trying to make him a guard. You still need guards. I mean, they have an opening at one spot, and I think you could argue Pat Elflein could get pushed at that other spot. But the cap hit being what it is, especially if you find a left tackle that you like, I certainly think people ask why they haven't done anything with that yet. I think you need to know, the reason I think nothing's happened with Riley Reiff is that you need to know you have a left tackle. You need to know that somebody else is going to be at that position. But if you find one, whether it's making the trade for Trent Williams or drafting somebody, I certainly think there's still a scenario where you make a move with Riley Reiff and you can clear some space that way.
Mike, you got a question for us?
Yeah, Mike Castellino wants to know, do you believe the Vikings will add a starting corner before the end of March, which is very soon? Maybe we can just extend the timeline. Will they add a starting corner? How about that?
Yeah, I mean, you got guys like Logan Ryan still available. You're not going to find certainly the premium guys, the guys that are going to cost a lot. But if the premium guys are Trey Waynes, those are the guys you wanted to get rid of anyway. So the reclamation project, I thought, would have made the most sense. And frankly, I'm surprised in reaching out to Nickell Roby-Coleman and his representatives, it sounded like the Vikings were in on him. And he ends up going to a cheap deal to Philadelphia. And the Vikings weren't able to swing that. And that's a slot guy who could step in for Mackenzie Alexander, do very well, hold over until they get some of these young guys along, maybe till they feel more comfortable with a Mike Hughes who's coming back from a pretty serious injury, or Holton Hill who needs time to develop, or whoever they draft. that you just need some kind of veteran presence. I thought that would make sense. They were in on him a couple years ago too, and weren't able to get a deal done. Jonathan Joseph is also a free agent. He's a former Texan. He's a former Bengal. Gary Kubiak and Mike Zimmer have both coached him, but he's also entering his 15th NFL season. So it'd be more like a Terrence Newman style addition.
Old Bengals.
Yeah. Yep. But wait, see, not all the former Bengals are gone, Ben. I think we've worn out all the former Bengals. We have not. We have a Jonathan Joseph available. So you never know. We'll have to see. But Ben, I wouldn't be shocked to see them add a veteran, either corner, safety, or both. And we know actually they've tried to add veteran safeties. They've just kind of swung and missed so far.
Yeah, they're trying to, I think, do it at a pretty low number, which, if you know, you can do that, but if guys have other offers, that's going to be the risk you take. I certainly think they'll make another move there to get somebody else in here, because they don't really have a lot to offer right now. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. A fun fact on Logan Ryan: he was one of the picks that the Patriots used after the Cordarrelle Patterson trade. It was, I think, one of the later picks in that trade. It brought Jamie Collins and Logan Ryan, among others, in that trade to New England, I believe. So I would be a little bit of a blast from the past if they were able to get him, if they did something like that there. Yeah, Roby Coleman, this is the second time they've taken a look at him. They had explored him in free agency a couple of years ago before, and evidently didn't see the price being to their liking to get it done.
His first name is basically describes a slot corner, so it would have been too perfect, but couldn't get it done, I guess.
And he would have been a big hit when they go back down to New Orleans this fall.
All right, Christopher asks, are we holding off on many free agents in order to extend Dalvin Cook this offseason? If so, what are some reasonable contract parameters for a talented but injury-prone running back?
Ben? I think extending him is certainly in the plans. From what I understand, those talks could start in the near future. It sounds like it's kind of been let things settle down and let the market get settled in terms of whatever else the Vikings are going to do. But I was really surprised if those talks didn't pick up something soon. As far as the market is, I think it's going to be interesting to see how this goes, because he could be in a position to get a deal before the rest of these guys in this class. And that is a very big, very talented running back draft class that's all coming into the position where they're going to get paid. It's Christian McCaffrey, it's Alvin Kamara, it's Aaron Jones of Green Bay, and it's Dalvin Cook. So there's a lot of guys that are trying to get paid, and somebody's probably going to set that market first. I certainly think Dalvin Cook could be the guy to do it, because I think the Vikings want to do it. I think it'll get done. In terms of the parameters, he's going to want to be near the top of that market, I think, from running backs, and have a deal that's in line with what some of these recent guys have gotten. But they will probably have to keep that first year number down. And the question I'm going to have is how they structure that. How do the guarantees work? How much of it is he locked into versus something where the number may be big, but there's not really all that much money that he is locked into getting for sure?
That just seems like such a mistake to me. As much as I like Dalvin, like, if you're talking about a team that is so pressed against the cap, and the thing everybody says is don't overpay your running backs, don't pay the running backs, you've got a perfectly good replacement in Alexander Mattison right behind him. I just don't understand the logic there, as much as I like Dalvin Cook.
I would tend to agree with that, but they also have made no secret of the fact that they like bucking the traditional logic as it relates to that position. I mean, Rick Spielman's talked about him kind of being like Dalvin Cook, or him being like Danielle Hunter in terms of guys they want to pay. And, you know, they've made it very clear that what they think of the running back position and the running game in general is not necessarily in line with what the rest of the NFL does. And Mike Zimmer made it very clear at the combine what he thinks of those who use analytics to make most of their decisions.
All right, Ben, why don't you ask one more, or bring up one more question, and then Mike, we'll have you do the chicken fingers statement of the week.
Yes, perfect.
So Ben, you got another question for us?
Yeah, I mean, Josh asks, and I think we've gotten into it a little bit, but it's coming up a little bit more often, so I think it's probably worth discussing at least briefly. Any chance whatsoever the Vikings would follow the Chiefs' lead from a couple of years ago and pick a young stud QB like Jordan Love, even with a successful starter like Kirk Cousins? Chiefs, of course, taking Patrick Mahomes, even though they still had Alex Smith, who then got traded to Washington, thus freeing up Kirk Cousins to come to Minnesota. So would the Vikings do that? It has not been in their history, but would this be the year that changes? Thoughts?
Oof. Now, Mike, I know you've talked about this and them you wanting to see them do this.
Yeah.
I certainly do not see that happen, especially after what we just saw with the Kirk Cousins extension. That seems to me the signaling of that he's the quarterback for the next 3 years. Now, I had said before, why not take a guy in the fourth? Now, this is before they re-signed Sean Mannion, so I got to come out there and say I was apparently completely wrong on that read, or they were not able to get anybody else because Sean Mannion is back. But I still think you could get a fourth, fifth round guy or whatever you deem as a reasonable round to take a swing on a guy, because in 4 years, maybe he's all of a sudden the guy that surprises you and is a Dak Prescott-like guy who can step in and help you.
Seems like a good year to do it when you've got five picks in the top three rounds. Like, you've got 2 third rounders, and that seems to me a good recipe for trying this. But they have so many needs, too. And the Cousins extension, right, I mean, it is – he already had the one, he's got the two more. I thought when I read it originally that the third year was kind of a mirage, but that becomes basically fully guaranteed at the start of next year, right?
It does, but it is a huge number. So, and he does not have a no trade clause anymore. So, I still think it's worth keeping antenna up on that one just to see what happens with, I mean, because in a year, a lot of things could look different. I mean,
yes. So yeah.
Still feels to me like it's going to be hard to imagine that he's playing on that same deal in 2022.
Yeah, it feels like if they like someone, I don't see why they wouldn't. They're not married to Sean Mannion. What was his number? Do we know what his contract was? It's got to be small enough.
The league minimum deal.
Yeah, if they just decided, nope, we like this other guy, he can be our backup. Sean Mannion, go away. It's not the end of the world. So I'm still on board with like maybe a third round pick this year being spent on a quarterback.
Wouldn't be too shocked to see. Well, I mean, I would be shocked to see a third rounder, but again, a late rounder wouldn't be too shocking considering their situation, but they just don't do it that way. So it'd be kind of a break of the mold a little bit. All right, Mike.
Yeah, Jason.
Oh, go ahead.
Jason asked a question, and we won't spend a ton of time on it, but it dovetails with this a little bit. Just he asked if the Vikings are going to internally acknowledge that the win now window is over.
Yeah, that's a good question.
I don't think they are doing that necessarily. I think if you acknowledge that it's over, you're not planning for Kirk Cousins to be your guy going forward into the future. I think a lot of this is still very much, let's try to retool on the fly and win in the process. So if they didn't draft a quarterback, I think it would be further evidence that they are not giving up on the win now window. I don't think they're thinking that way. I think it's let's try to build the airplane while we fly it kind of approach, at least on defense, what they're going to have to do.
All right, chicken fingers statement, then we're out of here. Chicken fingers 69 says, I think it'll be interesting to see how the front office blows this draft. Will it just be their regular drafting bad players with limited ability Treadwell approach, or will they blow it in some new interesting way that's somehow related to the virus? Time will tell.
Oh, my God. Oh, wow. Well,
they
can't
use the fancy draft board. I mean,
no.
Zimmer will be okay with that. He was not a fan. Spending all the money so that they couldn't use magnets, as I recall from the Sports Illustrated.
This is the franchise that did not draft in 2003 twice, correct?
Yep. But still got Kevin Williams, so it worked out.
It worked out, yeah. It worked out. Imagine if they had gotten Troy Williamson because of that or something. What are the new inventive ways that this could go wrong? Mike, I said to you off the top before we started the podcast, I can't believe the NFL is pressing forward with this and going to do like kind of a, you know, teleconference draft, because are you really trusting the Dave Gettlemans of the world to get on Zoom?
We're all doing it. We're doing the draft on Microsoft Teams. It's going to be great. No, I mean, I'm not surprised they're doing it. And in some ways I understand it, because they're in their off season, right? Unlike almost every other one of these sports that has either had to suspend a regular season or hit pause on something that was just about to start, like baseball. So they're in a position where they can say, look, we need to be ready for when we are able to go back to work. And so we need to have a draft and pick these players anyway. But yeah, just the league edict that talk about this in a negative way and you're going to get there being repercussions. That is so Goodell, so NFL. It's beyond the pale.
As is the idea that there was something earlier in that statement about we think the draft is good for the country right now or something like that. I mean, the belief that they are an essential service and that the NFL or that a country cannot go on without the NFL is also very NFL. Now,
it is.
We hear a lot of people talking about it is nice to have the distraction, and I agree with all of that. And it certainly is nice to have something else to talk about. It's just not, and the ratings would suggest that perhaps they're right that we can't move on without the NFL. But
yeah, the NFL acknowledging in that letter, Goodell acknowledging that, hey, you know, it could be a welcome distraction. That's something you say in a board meeting, not put on a press release. Like you don't put that out there. You don't just say like, you know what, we're good for you people, because you know that's getting leaked. You know your memo is getting leaked. Are you on Twitter,
Unless
Goodell?
You we don't know care. You are.
Thanks so much for checking out our podcast. I'm sure this is the first of many teleconferenced podcasts that we're going to end up doing. So please bear with us with any technical difficulties, but we will be back talking to you guys next month ahead of what is going to be, according to Roger Goodell, the NFL draft.
Maybe you should get off the podcast.